This is side four of an interview with Mr. Jerome Edlis for National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Chapter, Oral History 2. Interviewers Sylvia Busis and Jean Meth. And this is a continuation of the previous side, November 4, 1982. All right, we just had to turn the tape when you told us how that you had a lot of experiences in the business. Well, in the business, and also from what I read, you also were very active outside of the business, weren't you?
Oh,
in a lot of
after I came into the business.
Right.
I actually fell heir to a business and to nobody's foresight. Right before the beauty business came to be a business, we were an artist supply business. It came just to the art. There was no beauty shop. In those days, beauty shop business didn't start until 1922.
Oh, really? All the women did their hair at home,
Well, they didn't. There were a few hairdressing parlors, but most of them did their hair at home. There was no beauty schools or anything like that. Europe had some, but not in this country.
Sounds as if you were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Well, there's a story attached to my dad. I claimed that, and some of the others argued different, but I claimed that, and I think he, I don't know if it wasn't here, that Dad indirectly was responsible for the beauty business in the United States.
Really? In what way?
Well, in 1922, prior to the beauty business, Dad decided to make a return trip back home to Europe. He hadn't been home since he came over here. And he went for a 6-month trip. At that time, there was no Israel. It was Palestine.
Right.
So, and he was quite active in the Jewish National Fund. I think he was one of the, I believe he was the first president of the Karen Assad, Karen Pittsburgh. But he went back to Europe, and when he went back to Europe, he went back on a steamship that they weren't flying. And this was just coincidence with the business. And they had a barber shop on the boat. The barber took care of what few women wanted. Fixed up best he could. And on boat as passengers of the shipping company, there was a very well-known American dance couple by the name of Irene and Vernon Castle.
Oh,
you
my goodness.
Heard that name.
Of course.
See? And I don't, I'm not making up
no.
any stories because it's very interesting. And Dad had a lot of time to himself, and he, being in the barber supply business, he'd go in and sit down and just talk to the barber when he wasn't busy. The barber was a friendly barber, ship barber. And one day while he was in there, the barber says to him, Mr. Edlis, he says, you know, he says, I have a problem and maybe you can help me. So he says, what do you got? Maybe something serious? And he says, well, just what is it? He says, you know, he says, the Castles are on the ship here. He says, they do ballroom entertaining every night. They would do their dancing. They were great ballroom dancers. is Irene Castle, every time she comes in to get her hair dressed, fixed up in the afternoon, she says she talks about her hair. Her hair is always getting in her eyes. She had long hair because they used to twirl around the old dancing. They don't do that no more. So he says, so what about it? Well, she says it gets, when she dances, it gets in her eyes all the time. What can she do? So Barbara said, I told her, I don't know. Put ribbons in there, put combs in there, do whatever you can. So he says, do you have any suggestions that you could remedy that? He says, well, I don't know how you could remedy it. He said, however, he said, I can see just one thing. He says, clip some of it off. And that was the origination of the Irene Castle Bob.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And that's John, the Bob is in history, but they don't tell it as, he's as clear as I tell it, because I have a story from my dad. And sure enough, they, Barbara told her, she said, okay, cut it. Prior to that time, women weren't going into the barber shop. See, before they had beauty shops, they went after, when this occurred, then the women started to fashion themselves after Irene Castle.
Well, she must have been happy with her haircut.
Oh, she was, very much so. I mean, it was a very natural thing to happen. And when they got to, when the ship got to London, England, the newspapers were full of Irene Castle Bobs.
Oh,
pictures.
My goodness.
See, Dad then got in touch with us, Kate and this. We talked to him on the phone several times, and he says, I got news for you. He said, we got a new business coming into the country, to your country. And he says, because they're getting ready for it over here. Usually the fashions start over there anyhow.
Well, he was a very far-sighted man, wasn't
yeah.
he?
And he says, there's going to be a beauty business. He says, it won't be very long when you'll be hearing all about it. So he decided he'd spend another month or two over there looking around with some of the manufacturers and lining. We were the first to bring in quite a few items for the beauty field in general, which we just distributed locally, but we were the initiators. We were the first barber supply dealer that actually went to the beauty parlor business because of him being over there in Europe.
Well, he was very perceptive.
Before he came back here. It's all luck, as far as that was concerned. But that's the story of the beauty.
That's
business.
Amazing.
That
wonderful.
It's a billion-dollar business. We didn't get the $1 billion, but overall, I mean, it's been a lot of people don't know anything about it.
You mentioned that your dad was the founder of the Karen Hyasod in Pittsburgh here.
Well, he wasn't the founder. I think he was the first president.
First president.
With Dr. Lichtenstein. And in those days, it seemed as though most of the Zionists, the old Zionists, like Abner was one. They had the old Zionist Council up on the hill up on Center Avenue, were doctors, few lawyers, druggists, we used to have a big drugstore, Mendelssohn, I don't know if you remember Mendelssohn.
Jake Mendelssohn, right?
Yeah, he had a store, I think it's 32. He was, if they'd get the old list of the Zionists, you'd see that most of those professional men, pharmacists, doctors, a few lawyers, all were very active, much more so than they are.
What years are we talking about, this early Zionism?
Well, you're going to talk before the establishment, long before the war for freedom of
right,
Palestine to get a Jewish state. Right in before that area.
Was this in the 20s or the 30s,
well,
do you think?
Let's see. It has to be after, after 22.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad also told us that when he went over to Europe that particular time, he happened to meet I don't know the man's name, but I've got no record of it, but he made up acquaintance with an Egyptian on the boat. And the Egyptian was an official, a state official of Egypt. Because my dad told him what he was doing here, and this got me in some place. So he says, when you get over there, if you find time, come over in the fifth. When you go, my dad has said that he's going to Palestine. Definitely he wanted to see what it was all about. So he says, make it your business to get in touch with me, give me this card. He said, I want you to come over to Egypt. He says, spend a couple of days with us. He said, we'll roll the red carpet out for you.
Oh my goodness, that had to have been unusual.
Well, it was unusual, see. And this man was an official of some kind. He went to Egypt. There was no trouble then at that particular mm-hmm. time.
So he went to Palestine really very, very early then.
Yes. He went to Palestine in 22. He spent 6 months over there on that trip.
It was so part of that same trip.
Yeah, I see.
He did
business over there.
He may have been one of the earliest Pittsburghers to go there. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I have a picture of him with a gentleman who was a Gentile gentleman too in Vienna, Austria, at that particular time. And that gentleman was in the beauty business to a certain extent. He was making permanent wave machines over there. And that was in, I think it's a Carlsbad, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, there was no, there was talk of a Jewish state always, but nothing was ever done up to that, at least up to that time. All came after 22.
And were you also involved in the early days of the Zionist movement here in Pittsburgh?
Not while my dad was living. I followed all in his footsteps.
When did he die, your father?
My dad died in 1934.
And then you took up where he left off with the Zionists.
I was treasurer of the General Zionists. After Nancy had passed away, I became a member of the Zionists. I was quite active in the days of Max Engelberg and his brother-in-law Steinbach, but they were all older than me, much older than me. They were all family men. I was a young man. I wasn't even married.
Were you one of the few young men involved, or were there others?
No. Our friend, the newspaper man, Louis Borgen, was active. Before I became a renegade of the Zionist group, I'm a begging man.
You're a begging man.
I just found some papers here all about the revisionists. We did more than any of the Zionists did, as far as Israel is concerned. I have proof of what we did.
Are those financial records or?
Some financial records.
Yeah.
Public got a lot to learn. That is Zionist Revisionists of America.
And there was a whole organization for them.
Oh, we had a fight, like Begin has a fight today. The past president, Mr. Nixon, mentioned Begin on TV this morning.
Oh, did he?
And Nixon was, did you see him, Mark?
Yeah. What did he say about Begin? I'm afraid to ask.
The commentator who handled the program, really, they talked about the Far East there, and he asked him about Begin, whether he was friendly with Begin or not, and but he brought out, he says, no, he says, you got to give Mr. Begin credit. Begin is a very, very smart man. He says the only thing is, he says at times he's a little stubborn, and sometimes he wants his way, but he says if it wasn't for him and the Egyptian president, yes?
Excuse me, you want to talk to me?
Anyhow, why are we talking about?
Well, you were talking about your activity with the Zionist Revisionists.
Well, that was because of Dad being over in...
yes, Dad, was your father a Revisionist Zionist
No? No. In fact, at that particular time when we started here, nobody knew anything about the Revisionists. See, the Revisionists was originated by... Jabotinsky, who was a follower of Herzl.
And how did you happen to go in that direction?
That's a story. I became active in the Zionist organization because I followed in the footsteps of my dad.
Right.
Because I joined pretty near every organization that he belonged to. He saw fit to that. But at that time, there was no revisionist. That was just in the making. When Jabotinsky and Begin was a student of Jabotinsky. First came Herzl, who was the founder of Zionism.
Right.
He was rich. Jabotinsky was a student of Herzl. Begin, a student of Jabotinsky.
Okay.
They lived both at, now Begin did not live at the time of Herzl, I don't think. I never forgot the dates exactly. But he followed them, his principles, and he joined them. They all belonged then to the World Zionist Organization. There's only one organization, the World Zionist Organization. Pittsburgh was a branch. Chicago was a branch. All the different cities were branches.
So how did they get their philosophy across to
they
you?
They were all at one time believed only in one thing. That's one thing was good, that they believed in a country for the Jews. That was Dad's belief in every other Zionist. When I joined the Zionists, I was quite active. I was an officer to there. And then Begin took over when Jabotinsky passed away. Jabotinsky died later on than Herzl.
Okay.
And Begin, I don't even think, was living at the time of Herzl, if I'm not mistaken. In those days you had Rabbi Stephen Weiss, Rabbi Silver from Cleveland.
Abba Hillel Silver.
Now, Abba Hillel Silver was a general Zionist. but he leaned very, very much towards Chabotinsky's revision.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, because he was a fighting man. Not fighting with his fists, but Chabotinsky was a learned student. He wasn't a rabbi. And of course, Silver had to be very careful what he said and what he did, because he had a big book in Cleveland. He was a big man, same as Wise was. Stephen Wise was a great Zionist.
Right.
Stephen Wise, Rabbi Hill, Silver, Herzl, Chabotinsky, and poor Mr. Pagan. He was in the prison camps in Russia. That's where he was. But managed to get by, to become the ruler of Israel, so you got to give him some credit.
Oh, yeah, we give him credit.
See?
But how did you become a revisionist?
All right, so now then, thought about the name of, I belong to the Zionists, and did you know Mr., what was his name? Lowenthal.
Alex Lowenthal, yeah.
Mr. Rosenblum's.
Charlie Rosenblum.
Charlie's. Lowenthal was the business agent for Rosenblum, for Charlie Rosenblum. Charlie had money. No man's money. Anyhow, Alec Lowenthal was active in the Zionist organization because I had several run-ins with him. That's when I left the organization. But a fellow by the name of Schiff, Bill Schiff, you know Bill Schiff? S&S Printing
Company. Oh, I was going to ask you if it was the printing company.
Yeah. S&S Printing Company. Siegel was, he was a Zionist by membership only. But Schiff was one of the early, well, we should have mentioned Rabbi Lichter was very, very active. In fact, when Schiff passed away in memorial services, was performed by Rabbi Lichter, because Schiff belonged to B'nai Israel, and I'll never forget at the services. Rabbi Lichter pointed to the casket. They had the casket in the shul. And he pointed at the casket. And he says, that man, to a certain, I don't know the exact words, but he pointed to him. And he says, if it wasn't for men like Bill Schiff, you wouldn't have him as Bill Schiff was a general Zionist first, and then he became a Jabotinsky man before Jabotinsky split up. He sent his boys to the Batar camp, both of his boys.
Where was that camp?
Starlight, up in the...
Poconos, it sounds like.
Yeah, in the Poconos. Anyhow, Schiff, our ship got connected with the other group of Zionists. I don't remember exactly, other than I know that when Dad was head of Karen Asut, Schiff was quite active, and a fellow by the name of Levitt, I got his first name here. He too, those two practically run the council, the Zionist organization's office, but they were volunteer workers. They didn't have no money to pay anybody in those days. So Schiff, through friends of the Batar, which was a military part of the Zionists, came to me one day and brought in a gentleman from New York who was a very, very staunch Zionist. But they were all the military group. They were the followers of Chabotinsky and of Begin. Jabotinsky was very close at one time to Rabbi Selner, Rabbi Weiss, because it was all one group. And Jabotinsky, though, was a more of a military man, not actually a soldier, but he believed that if you want to get anything, you're going to have to do some fighting for it. So it, one of the general, one of the World Zionist conventions or meetings, prior to the rise of Hitler, Jabotinsky had words with Weiss, from what I understand, Weiss, and the rest of the big shots. Goldman, I think, was very active.
Nahum Goldman?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a, they were all at Gurion. They all belonged to the World Zionist Organization. There was only one group with units throughout the country. But at that point, things were getting hot. That's when they were, due to Jabotinsky and men like Weiss and Silver and other men like that, but some of them I didn't know. And I wasn't real active as far as, they were all older than me. That was my dad's time. In fact, my dad also, I think, went to one of the convention on his trip. The Congress was going to be over in Europe at that particular time. And but my split came when Schiff came to me and he says, this gentleman, his name is Nat Newey. Nat Newey is his name. He first worked for the Jewish Encyclopedia.
Could you spell that name?
I got okay. It someplace.
Oh, well. Okay, go ahead. We'll get it from you after.
I can get you the spelling. Anyhow, that's when they were organizing, well, at the Congress, one of the Congresses, Jabotinsky got up on the platform, and he was quite a northerner, I understand. I never heard him talk. He was before my time. I had a kid. But Jabotinsky got up, I understand, and he made a statement that when, how did he say it, when Hitler comes to power, over 6 million Jews will disappear from the diaspora. And there was an uproar. They said, he's a crazy man. He don't know what he's talking about. And he was condemned. Unknown. And he said, let them call me whatever they want to call me. He says, I'm a Zionist. He says, however, he says, if you don't prepare for what is, he was a real student. He was that type of a man, I understand, that he could go into any of the European countries and within 30 days, he could master their language so that he could talk to the officials and he didn't have to go to talk to just ordinary people. That was, you'd have to get a book and read the history of Jabotinsky. Anyhow, he says, when Hitler comes to power, 6 million Jews will be wiped off the face of the earth. He says, crazy man. So, well, he says, that's what I think, and I'm going to stick to it. He said, you want to call me crazy? Call me crazy. Do whatever you want. He says, but since you don't agree with me or don't want to even listen to me, he says, I'll go my way and you go your way. That was the birth of the United Zionist Revisions. He was going to revise the Zionist thinking. And he formed the revisionist group, which is now the same as you hear the name? Not the Histon. The Histon group was the Ben Gurion group. Revisionist was. It's Begin's group in Israel. They have a different name.
The Likud party.
The Likud, yeah. But here it's the. This is all old literature. This is when Dr. Shechtman, who also was a student of Chapotinsky.
You are a saver. We're lucky that you are.